This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com. From the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking try free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
Dave, can you tell me what the general feeling is inside, say, the Biden campaign about third-party presidential candidates? On a scale from, like, complete terror to total chill, where are we?
They're not at the terror point yet, just because there's so much time until the election.
Dave Weigel is a reporter over at Semaphore, and how politics works is his whole thing. But
they're active. They have an opposition research operation going on for third-party candidates. That's a signal of how worried they are, and that's pretty new for this cycle. I've not seen this level of work on that front this early in a campaign before.
Democrats worry, Dave says. It's hard-earned. Lots of Dems wonder whether Al Gore may have won the White House if Ralph Nader had stayed home in 2000. Some think Jill Stein spoiled Hillary Clinton's chances. So you can understand a certain suspicion heading into 2024. The mainstream candidates are both trying to fend off runs from academic and advocate Cornel West, Jill Stein again, and then there's anti-vaccine champion RFK Jr., who is running as a political Nepo baby. At the same time, the No Labels Party seemed to falter in its quest for the White House. After pushing to get on the ballot in more than a dozen states, last week the group suddenly announced it had no one willing to run. Dave says there's a reason for that. For about a year, different groups affiliated with the Democratic Party worked together to stamp this threat out. And it worked.
No Labels in January was so frustrated by this that they asked the Department of Justice to investigate election interference by this coalition of progressive groups. I should add, they were saying this is unfair, this is election interference, this is an affront to civil rights. They went ahead and they really did snuff out No Labels at that level.
Is No Labels kind of like the head on the pike for the Democrats? Like, we will do this to you.
It's an example of how effective they can be. They are confronting head on that most of the electorate thinks Joe Biden is too old and they need to do something to smother and destroy these groups before they can be competitive on the ballot.
Today on the show, the Biden campaign versus the third party threat. Who will win? I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. It's easy to start a quote. You'll be able to choose the best option for you. It's fast. Now that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you. It is just one of many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. I want to start off with a kind of obituary for the No Labels third-party candidate effort, if we can. And I want to go way back. Like, where did No Labels come from?
Yes, No Labels starts in the Obama years in this overall cultural moment where there is a lot of money sloshing around for, let's call it austerity politics. They are most active in how can we get moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats to work together on ideas that the left of the Democratic Party might not like. So it is indeed a coalition of Republicans and Democrats, but it is a certain kind of Democrat. In 2014, they're endorsing some Republicans running for Senate on the hope that there'll be a Republican Senate, and therefore there'll be gridlock, and therefore there'll be more opportunities to force the two parties to work together. They're not conservative in the sense that they want to blow up the status quo, shrink the government, shrink the administrative state. They're conservative in the sense that they want fewer big new progressive programs and no huge change to the tax system.
It's funny because No Labels has described itself as a grassroots movement, but it sounds more like, in your description, it's a very Washington movement based in political circles. So it's about people who are already in power trying to slow down a race to change how things work.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. This is very common in Washington for a group to launch with a grassroots branding, but to be very, very top down. And I won't get into all of them, but this is pretty common in DC that this happens. And they did build, they built membership over the years. They do have people who call themselves No Labels members.
Congress members or like regular Joe members?
Congress members and also just supporters, but this is a fairly elite kind of people who might be involved with Rotary or whatever might say, oh, I also support No Labels, but it's pretty small.
No Labels is probably best known for creating the Problem Solvers Caucus. That's a group of moderate Republicans and Democrats in Congress who work together to do things that might not be supported by the far left or the far right. Dave says the caucus is most famous, or rather infamous, for its actions in 2021. That's when a small group of problem solvers split Biden's infrastructure reform off from a must-pass debt ceiling bill. That meant that Build Back Better did not get passed for months. And when it did, it was way slimmed down.
And that's the point really where across the Democratic Party, this goes from a group that is annoying to them and works to elect Republicans to one that is really eating their seed corn and trying to disrupt their agenda.
Was it always a given that No Labels was going to enter this presidential election, 2024?
It wasn't. There was a lot of suspicion about what the long-term plans of this group might be, again, from Democrats.
Because they're not a political party, right? They're like a coalition.
They're not. This actually became an issue in the ballot drive campaign. They have relevance in Congress, obviously. They have more relevance in Congress than ever before in this Build Back Better period. But after that, after the midterms in 2022, they start to argue Americans are frustrated with their choices. We need a insurance option on the ballot.
Hmm.
The insurance is framed as, aren't you unhappy with having to choose between Donald Trump and Joe Biden? We're going to give you the insurance of something else to vote for that probably agrees with you on at least half of what you think.
But the third party candidate's never going to win. So I don't know how does the insurance work?
The insurance would be, in theory, that the no-labels candidate wins the presidency and, aha, instead of having to choose between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, I chose between Joe Biden and Donald Trump and the no-labels ticket, and the no-labels ticket is president. One thing Democrats point out when indicating no-labels' own polling is that the way elections work in this country, and this is a problem for every third party, presidential elections are different. Every state has electoral votes. If no one has 270 electoral votes, the election goes to the House to a very undemocratic process where each state has one vote and they choose the president. The understanding by everybody in politics is that Republicans have majorities of the delegations in a number of states. If you have the majority delegation, let's say you're Wyoming, you're North Dakota, you're South Dakota, those each have one member, they would vote for the Republican candidate. There are states where it's pretty divided, but Republicans have one more vote, they would vote for the Republican candidate. So what Democrats point out is by no-labels own polling, the best they could do is maybe throw the election to the House, and then Donald Trump would be elected by the House. That's what they point out, is that there is no true victory strategy for this campaign. When they poll the most optimistic kind of poll, when they ask people, do you want a third option on the ballot? They do okay, but they don't win the election. When they poll with a name, or when they poll with the name no-labels, they do really poorly.
Back in January, there was news that No Labels was being sued by some of their donors because they were trying to run a third party candidate. The donors were arguing No Labels was pulling a bait and switch, basically. They were like, we don't want a third party candidate. We thought this was about ideas and the movement. And when I saw that, I was like, what? What's going on? Like, do these people know what they're doing? Are they all agreed?
Yes, this is the Durst real estate family that files this lawsuit. It asked for it asked for reimbursements for the six figure donations it had given. It's the Durst to sue for breach of contract, saying that the bait and switch is their word, that you were supposed to be a nonpartisan policy group and you're running a political campaign. That's not what we signed up for. That's, they lose much more than they gain from this process. They're not getting even resources from Republicans that think that they're going to help meddle and swing the election for them. RFK Jr. does, but not No Labels.
So No Labels announced on Thursday they were not going to field a presidential bid. And this is after like a month of windup, being like, we're going to have a meeting, we're going to find a guy. They were floating names. I guess I'm curious, like, by the time this effort failed, like, how many people had they gone through asking to run on their ticket?
It's hard to count. So the big names are Joe Manchin, Chris Christie. Other names were floated. So a thing No Labels would do, which to Democrats was both ridiculous and worrisome, was if anyone existed in politics and had a complaint about, if a Republican had a complaint about Donald Trump, if a Democrat had a complaint about Joe Biden, they would reach out to them. They would say, please talk to Nancy Jacobson, our leader. They'd say, come meet with us. Here's our data on how you could win. So there's not a list of how many people they chose. People who have a lot to lose in their political careers are not really interested in running, but they're not interested in running a campaign if the candidate isn't well known enough to be competitive. You know, who in America might be competitive with frustrated voters? Somebody who's very famous, who has a lot of credibility, maybe political experience, maybe not. Those people are just not interested. Chris Christie's a good example because he talked about it a bit more openly after they reached out to him. They show him their polling where he wouldn't be winning the election. They talk about his potential running mate, and they list some people who have not agreed to run as No Labels candidates for vice president. They clearly don't have much of a plan. They have a vibe.
So when you look at this failed third-party effort, does the messy result seem inevitable?
I think it does. The history of this project, for going back to 2008, is that doesn't work. That American politics do not work like politics in France is a good example. And in 2017, Emmanuel Macron comes to power. He creates his own party. It comes in the first round of presidential election. It wins the second round, mostly because he's up against the far-right National Front. That's a really inspiring example to follow if you are an American who's tired of the two major parties, but our system doesn't work that way.
After the break, the other third-party candidates.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
Technically, there are a whole bunch of potential third-party candidates still in the running this year. Cornel West, Jill Stein. But Dave says, really, there is one option. Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
The polling right now, very clearly, Kennedy is the only third-party candidate polling above 10%. He polls close to 15 or above 15 in some polls. In every state I've seen where he's an option, his support is larger than the gap between Trump and Biden.
Yeah, 10% plus seems pretty solid.
Well, solid is an interesting way to put it, because the Democratic theory here is that as he gets better known, that is going to fall off, because it always does. And you had a good example of this last week, first week of April. He has riffed on a lot of topics without really coming up with a clear position. What Democrats did last week was highlight that, hey, when asked about January 6th, he sounds a lot like Donald Trump.
You can rebuild a Capitol. If you eliminate the Constitution, there's really nothing left of America.
So he says these things that, let's say, by and large, Democrats don't agree with. And he comes out with one statement saying that he'd appoint a special counsel to look at whether people's civil rights were abused after they were arrested for participating in the insurrection, which he says is not an insurrection. And then he comes up with another statement saying that actually his first statement had said that the January 6th protesters were unarmed. He's learned that some of them are armed. He wants to correct himself. And that's what Democrats think will keep happening. And if they just tell those angry Democrats, hey, you can't possibly vote for this guy, that they're going to benefit from that.
I mean, you've been to events with these third party candidates, including RFK Jr. What are the people who turn up there looking for out of a candidate?
Well, people who are considering West and Stein, this includes a lot of people whose defining issue is Gaza, and they have ruled out voting for Joe Biden. They will not vote for Donald Trump. They want somebody on that topic. The Kennedy voter is a little different. It really is a mix of people, and the polling captures it pretty well, that there are Democrats and Republicans. Generally, it is people who agree with him that the government is controlled by something, by corporations, by elites, by the government, for whatever reason, is not going to fix the problems with America, which include just basics like the high obesity rates, the inflation, the high price of homes. Kennedy has not really run a here are my liberal positions, here are my conservative positions campaign. He's taken this mix of positions that are basically politics are exhausting, and there's a lot of work being done to get you to trust these bought and paid for experts who've taken over things. I will break past that.
You know, unlike No Labels, which was on the ballot in like more than a dozen states, last time I checked, RFK was only on the ballot in one state, Utah. So how does his candidacy actually become a true threat to anyone else?
Well, it's a lot of time for him to get on the ballot in other states. How it would work, let's say, what's the Democratic would be? Kennedy is on the ballot in the key Midwest swing states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. He's on in Arizona. He's on in Georgia. Maybe North Carolina was one of the earlier cutoff dates where he wants to get on the ballot. And he gets more votes than the difference between Trump and Biden. That could be a fraction of what he's polling at now. That could be he gets 4% of the vote.
Because the margins are so tight.
Yes, the margin would be tight. And This is something that people fight about for generations. There are still arguments people have over whether third-party candidates helped or hurt Bill Clinton in 1992, whether Nader voters were that important in 2000. This is a very tedious, as somebody's lived through some of these, argument to have. Hey, and you know, Joel Stein even says this, that most people who vote for the Green Party wouldn't have voted for the Democrat anyway. That's belied by what's happened in a few elections. The Green Party support has surged when people don't like. The Democratic choice has collapsed when people do. And so that is the Kennedy threat as Democrats see it, just a critical mass of frustrated voters deciding to go for Kennedy when they might have gone for Joe Biden in one state. That could be enough. If his support collapsed and he got 5% in Wisconsin and Trump won Wisconsin by 1 point, Democrats would say we could have prevented that if Kennedy wasn't on the ballot.
Is Trump essentially relishing an RFK candidacy at this point?
They have not fretted that much apart from putting out statements saying he's actually a liberal. In what's now a 20-year-old marriage between Fox News and the Republican Party, Fox News is more illustrative than the Trump campaign. When Kennedy was running against Joe Biden as a Democrat, Fox covered him very, very frequently. They've covered him less as an independent, which a lot of us think reflects, a lot of us press, reflects that they think that he's, if you cover the views he talks about the most, those are aligned more with Republican voters.
I think generally, I have the feeling, and when I see the third party candidates being written about, I feel like they're always written about as a threat to Democrats and not Republicans.
Yeah.
Can you explain why?
Well, just in this election, the Trump vote is more coherent than the Biden vote. This is a little bit more like 2016, where both candidates were unpopular. Unlike 2020, when Biden was more popular personally than Donald Trump was, both candidates are unpopular. In swing states, both of them have favorable ratings, well under 50%. And the voters they worry about are called by third way and other groups double haters, people who say they hate both of their choices. And so in an election where it looks like maybe 20% of the electorate is going to fit into that camp, they need most of them to vote for Joe Biden. Failing that, a bunch of them to vote for RFK Jr. instead of Donald Trump.
Yeah. I mean, you've said that what happened with No Labels is kind of a template for how Democrats are thinking about dealing with third-party candidates moving forward. So what's their move now? Is this just a state-by-state battle?
On the ballot, it's a state-by-state battle. I'd say in the public discourse, it is national. There have been multiple New York Times stories about members of the Kennedy family who don't support RFK Jr. This is something Democrats have found in their focus groups, that when people hear that this Kennedy is not supported by most Kennedys, Democratic voters don't like him. Nationally, they are trying to get the word out there when Kennedy says something that liberals might hate. When it comes to state by state and ballot access, Kennedy's having a fight right now with Nevada, because Nevada has a Democratic Secretary of State. They are technically nonpartisan officials who handle the election work there. But Kennedy submitted his qualification petitions for the Nevada ballot before he had a running mate. And the state did not count them because you need to have a running mate to get on the Nevada ballot. The Kennedy campaign's argument has been Democrats are purposely sabotaging this campaign and they gave us the wrong advice. And the final part of this back and forth is Democrats and Nevada officials saying, it's really up to you to read the paperwork. The mystery here is, did somebody in their office tell them? But the overall, how do we muddy this guy up strategy is not Democrats placing stories in Nevada news. It is national news. It is the national coverage of Kennedy. How can we make sure that he is covered as a secret right winger? That's their mission.
What does victory look like if you're a Democratic strategist who's trying to neutralize a third party threat? Is it candidates just not getting on the ballot at all?
If we get to the end of the ballot qualification process, which takes a long time, and Kennedy is not on enough state ballots to win the presidency, that would be, I think, a win for Democrats. If it's, hey, you can't even vote for this guy to get to win the election, so why bother?
How likely do you think that is?
I don't think it's terribly likely. Candidates with less support than him have been able to get on the ballot before. Failing that, it would just be, let's say, if there are 100 people in a room, 50 voted for Biden last time, 50 voted for Trump, and if they get 45 of those people who voted for Biden last time to stick with him and not vote for Kennedy, that'd be a victory for them. It's really just person by person pulling people who are considering Kennedy into the Biden camp. That's the slow grinding long-term victory they're trying to do.
Dave, thank you so much for jumping on the phone with me. I'm really grateful.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Dave Weigel covers politics for Semaphore. And that is our show. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Alin Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Madeline Ducharme, and Anna Phillips. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.